So just how committed is the Biden administration to an open border? They're so committed to an open border that they're now trying to stop the state of Texas from actually enforcing the border. As we know, the state of Texas tried to erect, for example, barbed wire fencing in the middle of a Texas state park to prevent illegal immigrants from simply rushing over the border and into the interior of the United States. The White House then ordered Border Patrol to go in and take down some of that fencing. The White House has also attempted to now sue the state of Texas to stop the state of Texas from passing a law that would criminalize illegal entry into the state of Texas, which would allow the state of Texas to arrest and then presumably attempt to deport illegal immigrants. The Biden administration said, no, only we have the prerogative when it comes to enforcing border law. And we have chosen not to enforce border law, which means you cannot enforce border law, which, of course, is an absurd contention. And the entire purpose of the federal government is to enforce things like the border. And if they won't do it, well, then states probably, under the law, do have the sovereign ability to actually enforce the border. That was the question before the Supreme Court. The Wall Street Journal reports that on Tuesday, the Supreme Court allowed the state of Texas to begin arresting and deporting non-citizens on its own, rejecting an emergency appeal from the Biden administration that argued that states can't interfere with federal authority over the border. The court declined to block Texas law, is known as SB4, that makes illegal border crossing a state crime and then allows state officials to conduct arrests and deportations. The Supreme Court was considering whether, in fact, the Supremacy Clause meant that the federal government had basically occupied that field of law and states could not intervene in any way, shape, or form. The Supreme Court decided, no, it turns out the state of Texas can criminalize illegal entry into the state of Texas by illegal immigrants and then attempt to deport. The Supreme Court order split the justices along ideological lines, but it's not a final decision, so it'll probably be remanded back to the appellate court, and then it will come back to the Supreme Court in another form. According to the Wall Street Journal, a state enforcing its own immigration law in conflict with federal policy could have an immediate and wide-ranging impact on the border. Migrants who claim asylum from persecution have long been eligible to remain in the United States, at least temporarily, because federal law implementing international treaties bars summary deportation before those cases are decided. So in other words, the federal government decides to grant somebody temporary asylum status while their case awaits, while it is pending, the state of Texas can say, well, I don't know about that. This seems pretty sketch. We're just going to arrest you and deport you anyway. The thing about this that's so odd, of course, is that for years and years and years, we've been told that it's totally fine for states not to cooperate with federal authorities in their non-enforcement of the borders. So if the federal authorities ask cities, for example, to give them information when an illegal immigrant is arrested, then cities can call themselves sanctuary cities and simply refuse to comply. So, in other words, the left-wing perspective on this is that if you are the city of New York and you wish to call yourself a sanctuary city, the federal government has not actually occupied the space and you can do what you want. But if you're the state of Texas and you wish to actually enforce the border, you can't do the reverse. The country of Mexico immediately came out and said, we won't even accept any sort of deportees from Texas. So if you try to ship them back into Mexico, we are not going to accept them. We'll only accept them from the federal government, which again goes to show you how hand in glove the Biden administration is working with the Mexican government. Remember, Donald Trump had in place, he had negotiated a remain in Mexico policy with the Mexican government. That remain in Mexico policy meant that if you tried to cross the American border and you were captured or you applied for asylum, you had to wait in Mexico to hear whether a court would allow you into the country or not. You could not be released simply into the United States, and then you never show up for your court date again. And Trump had negotiated that with Mexico. Day one, Joe Biden walked that one back. So the Mexican government, of course, prefers to work with Joe Biden rather than, say, the state of Texas. The government of Mexico put out a statement condemning the entry into force of anti-immigration law SB4 in Texas. They say, quote, on behalf of the government of Mexico, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs condemns the entry into force of Texas law SB4, which seeks to stop the flow of migrants by criminalizing them and encouraging the separation of families, discrimination, and racial profiling that violate the human rights of the migrant community. I didn't realize there was such a thing as the migrant community. I mean, spoiler alert, there isn't. It turns out the migrants come from 100 plus countries all around the globe. They don't constitute their own community. The state of Texas, which is heavily Hispanic, is not simply going after Hispanic people. They're going after anyone who is there illegally. Meanwhile, Mexico says that they reiterate their legitimate right to protect the rights of their nationals in the United States and to determine its own policies regarding entry into its territory. So in other words, Mexico is saying if a Chinese national crosses all the way through Mexican territory and then goes into the United States and the state of Texas arrests that person and tries to deport them back to Mexico, you know, where they were just a moment ago, Mexico will say, no, we get to protect our border from the American invasion from the north. Pretty amazing stuff. And again, it is the Biden administration that has announced multiple times that it will not take executive action in order to do anything about the border. That issue is going to continue to be an albatross around the neck of the Biden campaign. We'll get to more on this in just one moment. First, $20 barely gets you anything these days. You can't get a burger and fries for less than that. What about at the gas pump? Well, maybe a quarter tank of gas. But do you know what $20 will get you? From the cell phone company I use, PureTalk, you can get unlimited talk, text, and plenty of 5G data for just $20 a month. PureTalk gives you the same quality of service as your current cell phone provider, but for half the cost. The average family saves almost $1,000 a year, all with no contracts and no activation fees. You can switch to PureTalk and keep the phone and phone number you currently use, or you can take advantage of their great deals on the latest iPhones and Androids. Making the switch is incredibly easy. Their U.S. customer service team can help you join PureTalk in as little as 10 minutes. Choose to spend your hard-earned money with a wireless company that shares your values, supports our military and veterans, creates American jobs, and refuses to advertise on, you know, those fake news networks. Stop spending ridiculous amounts of money on your phone plan. Go to puretalk.com/Shapiro. Right now, my listeners can get an additional 50% off their very first month. That's puretalk.com/Shapiro. Again, puretalk.com/Shapiro. Go check them out right now. We'll get to more on all this in a moment. First, despite the anticipated rate cuts by financial experts, inflation continues to rise. The U.S. is grappling with a staggering debt of $34 trillion, and yet we're continuing to print more money, driving up the prices of everyday essentials even further. You can bury your head in the sand, or you can do something about it. Consider diversifying at least some of your savings into gold with Birch Gold Group. As a leading dealer of precious metals in the United States, Birch Gold is committed to helping you discover how gold, silver, and other precious metals can help protect your lifestyle in the face of current and coming economic instabilities. Precious metals have a proven track record over thousands of years. These metals transcend government influence. They're tangible. They can't be printed like paper money or stored as a number on a computer file. Birch Gold makes it easy to own gold. They'll help you convert your existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold. You won't pay a penny out of pocket. Gold is part of my savings strategy. I buy it from Birch Gold. Text Ben to 989898. Get your free info kit on gold. They've been the exclusive gold partner of the Daily Wire for over 7 years now, helping thousands of our listeners. They can help you too. Text Ben to 989898 right now. Again, text Ben to 989898 to get started. Speaking of albatrosses around the neck of the Biden campaign, yesterday, the House GOP held a hearing over the disastrous 2021 withdrawal of American troops from Afghanistan. According to Axios, General Kenneth McKenzie, the head of U.S. CENTCOM during the withdrawal, as well as Mark Milley, will testify to the House Foreign Affairs Committee, and Republicans on the panel would try to get the retired generals on the record in order to tie the failures in Afghanistan to the Biden administration, which, of course, that's precisely what they were. I mean, those failures are what sank Joe Biden's presidency. Go back and look at his approval rating. His approval rating was in the 50th percentile. It was about halfway. It's like 51, 52%. Afghanistan hits. He dumps to the low 40s. He has been there ever since. And there's a reason for that. Again, the simple failure of the Biden administration on Afghanistan was a prelude to all the failures since, whether in Ukraine or whether in Israel, whether you're talking in the Middle East or Eastern Europe, whether you're talking in the Straits of Taiwan or whether you're talking about in the Straits of Hormuz. All of this was presaged by the Biden administration's absolute disgusting weakness on foreign policy. How bad was the American government with regards to the withdrawal from Afghanistan? So bad that General Mark Milley actually did testify in front of Congress yesterday, saying that he literally has no idea how many Americans were left behind there.
The number of Americans, as General McKenzie said, an F-77 report is supposed to, every ambassador in every country of the world keeps an F-77 report, and they're supposed to track the Americans, where they're at, the phone numbers, address, et cetera, in the country. That was always a difficult number for us in the Department of Defense to get a hold of, and I think it's true at the tactical level and operational level as well. And I'll be candid. I don't know the exact number of Americans that were left behind because the starting number was never clear. Same is true of at-risk Afghans, SIVs, the commandos, other Afghans that serve with us. Those numbers varied so widely that they were quite inaccurate, as best I could tell at the time. So I would just say, I'm not sure, even today, about the accuracy of all those numbers.
Slow clap for the geniuses in the American military upper echelons who decided to work with Joe Biden on that pusillanimous withdrawal from Afghanistan. As General Jack Keane, retired, said, Joe Biden bears responsibility for this.
What we've heard so far, General, from this hearing is pretty much common knowledge. But this idea that the generals certainly do seem to be pointing a finger at the State Department here does not go unnoticed.
Well, first of all, I mean, the rose has got to be pinned here. And I think it's unequivocally clear. The decision to execute an unconditional withdrawal with a date certain that the president decided on over the objection of his military chain of command, the advice that his director of the CIA provided to him, that it's likely that ISIS and Al-Qaeda would grow and rise again if we pulled out completely. And the NATO nations who were there with us, who provided some 7,000 troops themselves, all to a person representing those nations, wanted to stay, not to please the United States, but because of their own national interests. Mm-hmm. The president made this decision over all of those objections. He owns everything that took place as a result of that decision.
The media have worked hard to obscure what Joe Biden did in Afghanistan. It is still the single greatest foreign policy failing of my lifetime. As one Afghanistan veteran, Mike Doody, testified, weak leadership is what leads to what happened in Afghanistan.
It remains a mystery to this day why, when he requested permission to take out that suicide bomber, it went up the chain of command and never came back down.
That's a great question, and I think the American people deserve that answer, because you need positive identification, and then you're going to put it up to the higher-ups. And either they're going to give you the go or the no-go on that. You know, I think what we have here is a difference between weak and strong leadership. Weak leadership holds zero accountability and pins the blame on their subordinates. Strong leadership will take extreme ownership and accountability for their actions and or inactions.
Well, speaking of failure to take extreme ownership over action or inaction, the Joe Biden economy continues to exist in this weird nether space in which the economy is booming. And then a month later, you get sort of revisions to the number of jobs that supposedly have been gained. Or the economy is doing amazing, but inflation is still carving away at all real wage growth. Or the economy is unbelievable, except that you're still paying way more than you were just a few years ago for gas. Gas prices, by the way, for the record, were $2.40 when Joe Biden took office per gallon. Today, they're clocking in around $3.50. Contributing to that entire problem is the fact that the Biden administration is beholden to its far left flank when it comes to oil and natural gas. In fact, back in January, the White House issued a temporary pause on pending approvals of liquefied natural gas exports, which, again, makes zero sense. Right now, Europe is begging for LNG. They're begging for it because Russia, of course, has cut off the supply of LNG to Europe. Europe has said we don't want to take that LNG because we don't want to pay Russia money in order to invade Ukraine. The United States should be filling that gap. Meanwhile, the Biden administration is steadfastly undercutting the oil and gas industry in the United States. Why exactly did the Biden administration do this? Of course, to fight climate change. Of course. So back in January, they issued an executive order saying, quote, President Biden has been clear that climate change is the existential threat of our time, and we must act with the urgency it demands to protect the future for generations to come. That's why since day one, President Biden has led and delivered on the most ambitious climate agenda in history. Today, the Biden-Harris administration is announcing a temporary pause on pending decisions on exports of liquefied natural gas to non-FTA countries until the Department of Energy can update the underlying analysis for authorizations. That, of course, followed on a September announcement by the Biden administration that they were going to slash offshore oil and gas leasing. And, of course, Joe Biden has suggested that there are going to be crackdowns on the oil and natural gas industry, which means nobody is investing in refineries. The natural result of that is increased oil prices, because obviously, in order to generate future product, you have to start the drilling right now. No one in their right mind is going to drill knowing that Joe Biden might step in and shut it down literally tomorrow. Meanwhile, Joe Biden's advisors are trying to suggest that this is having no impact on anybody. Here is Joe Biden advisor Amos Hochstein, economic advisor, talking about the LNG pause.
The question is, when you build out that much additional capacity, you got to take a second to say, wait a minute, before I give a lot more export licenses only to countries that don't have free trade agreements. So it's not a total pause.
Okay.
And then we say, all right, let's look. What are the economic impacts? How much demand is going to be past 2035, 2040 for gas? And what are the impacts on the communities that live along the shore of the Gulf of Mexico, which is really where all of these facilities are being built? And so let's take a look. Let's see if you do a study for a few months, see where it is, and then decide what the right course of action is. Do you want to approve everything? Do you want to select what is right for the economy, for the U.S. economy in the world? And I think we'll be in fine shape after that. I don't think it's going to have that much of an impact.
It's all ridiculous. That sounds better than it is. When he says countries with which the United States has free trade agreements, that does not include, by the way, virtually all of Europe. It includes like Australia, Bahrain, Canada, Chile, Colombia, Costa Rica, Honduras, Korea. It doesn't include any of the countries, by the way, that are currently under the Russian thumb when it comes to lack of energy supply. So once again, big win for the Biden administration as well. And again, the Biden administration is washing its hands, just like they did on immigration, just like they did on Afghanistan. They're washing their hands with regard to oil and natural gas. Here's Karine Jean-Pierre yesterday announcing that Joe Biden has already done everything he can to deal with the high oil prices.
The president has done everything that he can to deal with oil, obviously lowering the actions that he took led to lowering gas prices.
No, they really, really didn't. They really didn't. Again, you are now paying 50% more for gas than you were when Joe Biden took office, and it's not going to go down anytime soon. We'll get to more on this in a moment. First, nobody likes to talk about life insurance. It's dark. You have to think about death. But it's actually really important, and you need to include it in your financial planning this year. Start shopping right now with Policy Genius. Find the right policy to protect your family today. Give yourself the peace of mind that comes with knowing that if something were to happen to you, your family can cover all their expenses while getting back on their feet. Policy Genius's technology makes comparing life insurance quotes from America's top insurers easy in just a few clicks. You already have a life insurance policy through work that might not offer enough protection for your family's needs. It might not follow you if you leave your job. You do need a backup plan. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million in coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid those unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius has licensed agents who can help you find the best fit for your needs. When they make it this easy, there really is no excuse not to do it. Save time, money, and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head on over to policygenius.com/Shapiro or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes. See how much you could save. That's policygenius.com/Shapiro. Again, policygenius.com/Shapiro. We'll get to more on this in just one moment. First, I need to talk to you about something terrible, something absolutely terrible. I, of course, am speaking about asparagus, but you know, that's okay. I don't need asparagus. I make up for my vegetable deficiencies by taking Balance of Nature fruits and veggies. Balance of Nature fruits and veggies are the most convenient way to ensure you get your daily intake of fruits and veggies. Balance of Nature uses an advanced cold vacuum process that encapsulates fruits and vegetables into whole food supplements without sacrificing those natural antioxidants. The capsules are completely void of additives, fillers, extracts, synthetics, pesticides, or added sugar. The only thing in Balance of Nature's fruits and veggies capsules are, you know, the fruits and the veggies. You need nutrients to function at your best every single day. Balance of Nature helps to do just that. Like right now, I'm on the road. Normally, I might get sick, but I've been taking Balance of Nature, so I feel pretty good. Go to balanceofnature.com. Use promo code Shapiro to get 35% off your first set of fruits and veggies and an additional $10 off every additional set you buy. That's balanceofnature.com, promo code Shapiro. Go check them out right now. If you, like me, are having a hard time getting to that daily quotient of fruits and veggies, you need to check out Balance of Nature right now. That's balanceofnature.com, promo code Shapiro. So what this means that the Biden campaign is heavily reliant on pretty much using every tool at their disposal in order to just target Trump. That's it. Because they can't win on the basis of Joe Biden being a good president. He's not a good president. And so I think that Katie Porter spelled it out quite well the other day. Katie Porter is the representative from California, very famous for using a whiteboard very often before losing senatorial races. And she was appearing on Pod Save America. And she explained that there would be a solution for Joe Biden's lead rival. Here she goes.
And so people were like, we got to think everything. Every decision has to be made in tension with Trump. Mm. Soon, Trump will lose or go to prison or I don't know, have a heart attack. I'm not sure.
We call it the hamburger.
I don't know what his demise is going to be, but he'll have his demise. And the question will still be there. Who are we as Democrats?
Pretty amazing stuff, right? They're just counting on it. He'll go to jail or he'll die or he'll lose. Well, they will use every method at their disposal to make sure that one of those things happens, most likely the go to jail option. This presumably is why there is now a Donald Trump aide named Peter Navarro who is going to jail. Peter Navarro is a hawk on trade. He's very much in favor of tariffs. I don't agree with his economic theories, but I also find it quite weird that he is supposed to be going to jail for contempt of Congress. This would make him, along with Steve Bannon, the only officials in American history, so far as I'm aware, who have actually been jailed over a contempt of Congress charge. Eric Holder was held in contempt of Congress. Alejandro Mayorkas was recently held in contempt of Congress, I believe. None of them are going to jail. It requires the DOJ to actually carry that forward to criminal fruition. Well, just yesterday, the U.S. Supreme Court denied a request by Donald Trump's former aide Peter Navarro to avoid prison while he appeals his contempt of Congress conviction for defying a subpoena from a panel that investigated the January 6th attack. He is now going to be the first senior member of the administration to actually go to prison for actions related to the attempt to overturn Trump's 2020 election loss. Now, there's no question that he obstructed Congress in the sense that he actually had a legal duty to testify in front of Congress. They called him to testify in front of Congress. He refused to do so. He claimed executive privilege. Executive privilege really did not apply to the activities of January 6th. And so Congress held him in contempt. But that's happened a lot, people being held in contempt of Congress. The question is whether they then go to jail. And Peter Navarro is correct when he says, hey, guys, why is it that I'm the only one who goes to jail? Could that have to do with the fact that you really don't like President Trump very much?
The justice system, such as it is, will have done a crippling blow to the constitutional separation of powers and executive privilege. Here's where the homework is, because the big constitutional separation of powers are these. Can Congress compel a senior White House advisor, what they call the alter ego of a president, to testify before Congress? And executive privilege goes back to George Washington and his remarks to the Congress regarding the Jay Treaty. And he said very simply and clearly, succinctly, elegantly, that to write to the Congress, he said, I cannot command you as members of Congress to come to me. You cannot command me to come to you. And the reason is the constitutional separation of powers.
Now, again, the question is whether executive privilege applied to the kind of conversations that Peter Navarro was having with President Trump is an open one. The point is that there have been a lot of people who've been held in contempt of Congress over the centuries since the United States was created. He is the first guy to actually go to jail over something like that. And that presumably is because there needs to be a headline about Trump aides going to jail over January 6th. Meanwhile, over at the New York Times, they literally put out a piece titled, "It Turns Out the Deep State is Actually Kind of Awesome." So Donald Trump is constantly railing about the deep state. Correctly, it turns out that the permanent employed class in Washington, D.C., many of whom work inside the executive branch in these permanent agencies that never go away and never turn over, they're in danger from President Trump. And now the media are going to come out in their defense. There needs to be an unelected, unanswerable branch of the American government, according to the media, specifically to stymie the kinds of things that Donald Trump wants to do. And that is why you need entire pieces in the New York Times talking about the magic of the deep state. Quote, as America closes in on a major election, mistrust is brewing around the mysterious government entity that's now denounced in scary sounding terms. The deep state, the swamp. What do these words even mean? Who exactly do they describe? We went on a road trip to find out. As we met the Americans who are being dismissed as public enemies, we discovered that they are like us. They like Taylor Swift. They dance. They go to bed at night watching Star Trek reruns. They go to work and do their jobs, saving us from Armageddon. Sure, our tax dollars pay them, but as you'll see in the video above, what a return on our investment we get. When we hear deep state instead of recoiling, we should rally. We should think about the workers otherwise known as our public servants, the everyday superheroes who wake up ready to dedicate their careers and their lives to serving us. Wow. So what is this piece directed at? It's directed at Donald Trump not being able to use Schedule F. Schedule F allows the president of the United States to summarily fire people in the executive branch, which he should be able to do. That is a good thing because the president is elected and none of these jokers are. Now, that doesn't mean everybody who's working in a permanent position in the federal government is bad or bad at their job. What it does mean is that the only reason the media are celebrating these people today is because they believe they'll be an entrenched interest group designed to stymie and stifle anything that President Trump attempts to do. Democrats love the deep state specifically because it is unconstitutional. We'll get to more on this in just one moment. First, football season may be over, but basketball action is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on all the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into serious cash. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks. If you want to play alongside some of Prize Picks' favorite players like Meek Mill and Sugar Sean O'Malley, you can now find community plays under the promos tab of the app to view entries from some of the biggest names in the Prize Picks community every week. Conference tournaments are here. That means the biggest moments in college basketball are getting closer. Be part of the action on Prize Picks for both men's and women's college basketball. Prize Picks even offers injury insurance, so your entries stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. For basketball games, you got a player who exits the game in the first half and doesn't return in the second. That player projection will not count against you. The rest of your entry stays live. Producer Jake loves his Prize Picks. He's been doing well in all of the betting so far. Download the Prize Pick app today. Use code Ben for a first deposit match of up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Use code Ben on the Prize Picks app for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, head on over to the Prize Picks app today. Use code Ben. Get that first deposit match of up to $100. We'll get to more on this in a moment. First, there's nothing like sitting behind home plate at a baseball game, unless it's a White Sox game these days. But when you want the best tickets anywhere, you have to connect quickly or somebody else will get that seat instead. It's kind of like hiring for your business. You want to find the most talented people for your open roles really fast before the competition scoops them up. The best way to do that is with ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter will help you find qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/DailyWire. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology shows you qualified people for the role. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter. Find the best talent fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within day one. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/DailyWire. Try it for free. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/DailyWire. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. We've been using it here at Daily Wire for literally a decade at this point. Go check them out right now at ZipRecruiter.com/DailyWire. Try it out for free. Get the best employees quickly. Make sure you can filter them the most easy possible way. ZipRecruiter will do all of it for you. ZipRecruiter.com/DailyWire to try it for free. Now, again, this is one of the reasons you want to know why you guys got Trump. You know, the people on the left, you want to know why you got Trump. The reason you got Trump is because in 2012, Republicans nominated the most genteel candidate in modern American history, Mitt Romney. Absolutely milquetoast. Absolutely bland. Super genteel. Really polite. And you know what you did to him? You hit him with the kitchen sink. You reached into your pocket, you pulled out a lead pipe, and you beat him half to death. And then Republicans were like, hey, you know what? If you're just going to hit with everything you got, and it doesn't have to be fair, and it doesn't have to be right, well, we got somebody who will do the same thing to you. And every time the Democrats double down on this sort of stuff, it makes people in the Republican Party more passionate about somebody like Donald Trump, who's willing to use pretty much any tool at his disposal to attack his enemies. And it's every story. I mean, for example, Stormy Daniels. So Stormy Daniels, like the fact that Stormy Daniels is a national name, no credit to Donald Trump on his personal life, obviously. But let's be real about who Stormy Daniels is. Stormy Daniels literally met Donald Trump at a golf event, and she slept with him after meeting him because he said that he might be able to get her on The Apprentice or something. And then she tried to essentially blackmail Trump for years. And she essentially attempted to sell her story to the public to demonstrate that Donald Trump was just the worst person in the world. And so Donald Trump paid her to be quiet. So this raises some moral questions about, you know, a porn star named Stormy Daniels, who was willing to have sex with people because apparently they were willing to put her on The Apprentice for a moment in time, and then decided to try to sell that story to the press to make money. That's not like an amazing person, and that doesn't alleviate Donald Trump of his sins, but this kind of attempt by the left to make Stormy Daniels a charter member of the resistance is very weird on sort of a moral level. Well, now Stormy Daniels is making the case that the reason she actually took the money from Donald Trump, the reason she actually took the payoff money from Donald Trump to keep her mouth shut, the real reason is not because she just likes money, because, you know, she was a porn star who sleeps with a lot of people. It's not because of that. It's because she was afraid, you see. She's an actual victim in all of this. You can call Stormy Daniels a lot of things. You can't call her a victim in all this.
I was very relieved when Gina started reaching out and offering me the chance to keep it quiet. I was terrified. I mean, people had been suspiciously killed for political reasons. It was really about two things: trying to keep the story from coming out so that it would not hurt my husband and my daughter, and I wouldn't lose my life, and that there would be a paper trail and money trail linking me to Donald Trump so that he could not have me killed.
If you believe this, it's because you're a deeply stupid human being. That Stormy Daniels is sitting in daily fear that Donald Trump was going to have her killed. Stormy Daniels is one of a litany of women that Donald Trump has slept with and probably paid off. He was going to have her killed? Really? Do you believe that? But again, the media will still trot her out. They'll still present her as though she's like a credible voice of the opposition. Not a shock from the media. And any Republican is subjected to this treatment. What's funny is that Donald Trump has become the repository of all their ire, but as we know, they'll do it to literally anyone. In fact, just yesterday, Sarah Haynes had Christine Blasey Ford on The View. How Christine Blasey Ford is still welcomed in the halls of the media is beyond me. She went into Congress. She testified to a story that she had zero evidentiary proof of. None. And in fact, lots of counter evidence. And she is still treated as though her story is credible when it is deeply uncredible. So uncredible that some of the people she called as witnesses to the event herself said that it wasn't true. But media's still going to treat her as though she's a credible person. Why? Because, well, Brett Kavanaugh, that's why.
Well, you've been called a highly credible witness, and you have a PhD in psychology. You're a professor. You teach at Palo Alto and Stanford universities. But even today, some people remain skeptical of your story. And you write that during the hearing, Senator Lindsey Graham wouldn't even make eye contact with you. Were you prepared for that kind of response?
I was prepared ahead of time that that none of the Republicans were going to speak with me, and they were going to use an outside interviewer. Mm-hmm. And so I was actually surprised at how kind some of the other Republican senators were who broke that protocol and said hello.
Who was that? Can you name a good one?
Senator Flake and Senator Sass both came over and
neither
said,
neither one's in Congress anymore, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. But still, a credit.
Yeah,
good for them.
Both good men.
Yeah.
Okay, let's be real about this. She was not telling you a true story. And the evidence that Christine Blasey Ford was telling you a true story about Brett Kavanaugh being part of essentially a gang rape, the evidence does not exist for that. How many times can we go to this well before people stop believing what these folks have to be selling? And I mean people in the media who are willing to sell any story, no matter how nefarious, about anyone. Okay, the latest example of this, this is the story of the Trump campaign. Every other day, there is some story coming from Democrats about the Trump campaign and what Donald Trump has said. And again, Donald Trump says enough crazy things that you actually don't have to make things up if you wish to run a credible campaign. But Democrats can't help themselves. Did you know a baby's heart begins to beat at just 3 weeks? At 5 weeks, the heartbeat can be heard on ultrasound. This can sometimes be a baby's only defense in the womb, because when moms who are considering abortion hear that baby's heartbeat via ultrasound, they're twice as likely to choose life. Preborn rescues 200 babies every day from abortion by simply providing moms with ultrasounds. By 6 weeks, a baby's eyes are forming. By 10 weeks, a baby's elbows and knees are able to bend. Preborn needs your help to save these precious lives. Preborn is out there on the front lines. They're helping women choose life. Please consider sponsoring one ultrasound for just $28 and save a life today. Or if you have the means, consider a leadership gift of $5,000. That tax-deductible gift will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours and help rescue 200 innocent lives. Go to preborn.com/Ben to donate today. It's the most important thing you're going to do today, maybe ever, because saving lives doesn't get more important than that. Go to preborn.com/Ben. These ultrasounds are, in fact, life-saving. Moms meet their babies long before they're born. When they meet their baby, it makes it a lot harder for them to get an abortion. Go to preborn.com/Ben or dial #250 and say keyword baby. That's #250 baby.
Introducing two new and improved Jeremy's Razors. Fighting the left and building the future means constantly bringing your best, and that's exactly what Jeremy's Razors is doing. Choose between the new and improved Precision 5 Razor for an exceptionally smooth and close shave, or the brand new Sprint 3 Razor for a quick, clean shave. The new razors feature top-to-bottom redesign. Enjoy an ergonomic handle designed for superior durability. The new coated stainless steel blades are sharper, so they last longer. Increased flexibility allows the razor to better contour to your face to reduce nicks and cuts. Plus, the lubricating strip is now equipped with argan oil and aloe. It's time to toss out that woke razor and get yourself a Precision 5 or Sprint 3 trial kit today. Pledge to fight the left and build a future with Jeremy's Razors. Go to jeremysrazors.com and order yours today.
So their latest iteration is that Donald Trump is an anti-Semite. This dog is not going to hunt. Let me just tell you, it is not going to hunt. I will tell you why it's not going to hunt. Because the Democratic Party is currently engaged in the most disgusting volt-face, about-face, when it comes to the state of Israel that I've seen in my lifetime. Joe Biden is currently engaged in a process to withdraw armed support from a Democratic ally of the United States that's about to finish off a genocidal terror group. And he's doing so to win votes in Michigan. So no, I don't believe you when you people like Chuck Schumer are out there suggesting that Donald Trump is the real threat to Israel and the Jews, because Donald Trump had the temerity to say the Jews should vote Republican if they actually care about the state of Israel, but in more brutish words. No, I don't think Donald Trump is an anti-Semite. I know his kids. That's absurd. He has Jewish grandkids. Not just that he has Jewish grandkids. He's the most pro-Israel president in American history. Forget about his relatives. He's the most pro-Israel president in American history. It's an absurdity on its face. And the people that are trotting out to make the case that Donald Trump's an anti-Semite are, again, people like Chuck Schumer, who's busily engaged in undercutting the state of Israel. So Schumer, who was last seen on the floor of the Senate, calling for the ouster of the democratically elected prime minister of the state of Israel in the middle of a war based on a lie, which is that the Israeli people don't support military action in Rafah. Now he's back to say that Donald Trump is the real threat to the Jews here.
The former president's comments were utterly disgusting and a textbook example of the kind of anti-Semitism facing Jews, pushing the dangerous anti-Semitism trope of dual loyalty. To say you hate Israel or your religion because you have one political view over the other is sick, it's hateful.
That's not what he said. That's legitimately not what he said. Okay, stop this moron in one. Okay, so a dual loyalty trope is where you say, for example, that a Jew cares about Israel more than they care about the United States, that their true loyalty is not to the United States, it's to Israel. That would be a schmucky and anti-Semitic thing to say. Okay, that is an actual dual loyalty trope. That's what Schumer is referring to. Donald Trump never said anything remotely like that. He said that if you are a Jew, you should care about Israel, which is true. It's literally in the prayers. Every single prayer, every single day, it's there. You say it during what we call benching, which is the grace after meals. You say it during Shemona Esrei, which we say minimum 3 times a day. We read it in the Torah literally every week. When Donald Trump says, if you don't care enough about that, you're not doing Judaism right, he happens to be correct about that. And if that has political ramifications because the Democratic Party is busily running headlong away from the state of Israel in order to pander to Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib supporters in Dearborn, Michigan, that ain't Donald Trump's fault. That's Chuck Schumer's fault. This jack has spent the last several years, going all the way back to 2015, pandering to whatever is the left's most perspective on Israel the Democratic Party can push. In 2015, he personally involved himself in pushing the disastrous Iran deal that gave a bunch of money to the mullahs in Iran and gave them a pathway to a nuclear bomb. And here he is lecturing Donald Trump about anti-Semitism. This is why nobody believes your crap. This is why nobody believes it when you just start throwing out vague and specious charges that make no sense without any evidence. And the people that the media trot out on these matters are truly wild, truly wild. So, for example, there is a rabbi, and I say rabbi advisedly because I'm not sure about his rabbinic degree. His name is Rabbi J. Michelson. Okay, Rabbi J. Michelson was appearing on CNN with Abby Phillip to explain that actually he's very, very offended by what Donald Trump had to say about Jews and Israel. Here he was.
He also, believes, based on the Abraham Accords and things that he did when he was president, that Jews owe it to him to support him.
Yeah, like a true mafia boss or something, like we have to have loyalty because he moved the embassy to Jerusalem. Meanwhile, he helped coddle the hard, hard right extremists who have made peace impossible in Israel. Trump also, let's remember, blamed Israel for the October 7th attacks. He didn't come out with the statement saying how appalling and horrific the massacres and rapes were that Hamas committed on that day. He said, oh, well, Israel made a mistake, and he insulted the Israeli general, and he said this would never happen under my watch. It's always about him. And to see this kind of intense narcissism come at the expense of friends of mine who have children serving in the Israeli military, who had and friends who died on October 7th, it's just, I cannot think of a more despicable and disgusting act, and I can't believe it.
I can think of many more despicable and disgusting acts. For example, I could think of a president of the United States attempting to withdraw arms support from the state of Israel in the middle of a war to preserve their existence against a genocidal terror group. I could think of a president of the United States bending over backwards not to condemn open terror supporters like Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the rest of the squad. I could think of a lot of more disgusting examples, actually. And you know who I don't take seriously? This guy. You know why I don't take this guy seriously? He wrote a piece in 2009, okay? In 2009, not 2024, 15 years ago. And it was titled, quote, "How I'm Losing My Love for Israel." And what was that piece about? How I'm losing my love for Israel? The entire piece was about poor him. He was losing his love for it because it made him feel so uncomfortable in his progressive circles because he had to defend the state of Israel defending itself. Oh, poor him. This guy, this is the true lover of Israel. He also, by the way, is largely a spokesperson on behalf of LGBTQ plus minus divided by sign causes, which last I checked, not huge in the traditional Jewish community because of this thing called the Bible and all of halacha. Not to get too abstruse on people. In any case, this guy suggests in that 2009 piece that he's really upset that his progressive bona fides have been called into question because of the fact that he is not, that he's too supportive of Israel back in 2009. Quote, "I think my love of Israel is fading because I feel personally implicated by its injustices. Even though I've chosen to live in America and have relinquished my right to have any say over Israeli policies. On a recent trip to Berlin, I remarked to a friend I felt more relaxed there than in Jerusalem." Pardon me if I don't take your opinions on Judaism very seriously, Rabbi. Pardon me. By the way, last week, he literally tweeted this, quote, "I can't escape the feeling that the war has gone beyond a justified military response to October 7th or the fear that it is being spurred on in part because of a thirst for collective punishment." A thirst for collective punishment. He's accusing the Israeli government of engaging in a thirst for collective punishment. Pardon me if I don't take you seriously on your contentions that you are just so offended on behalf of the Jewish population. Rabbi J. Meg, again, I can't even believe this stuff. It's just ridiculous. In just one second, we'll get to the Biden administration policy, which is getting worse by the day in the Middle East. We'll get to that momentarily. First, Jeremy's Razors is doing the unthinkable. It's a sale you can't miss out on. Jeremy's Razors is lowering all prices for every razor. You want a trial set? Lower price. You want the starter set that comes with more cartridges? Lower price. Smooth 6, Precision 5, you guessed it, lower price. Take advantage of Jeremy's March of Madness now. Get it? It's like March Madness, but it's March of Madness. Go to jeremysrazors.com, get your razor at a discount right now. Did you know a baby's heart begins to beat at just 3 weeks? At 5 weeks, the heartbeat can be heard on ultrasound. This can sometimes be a baby's only defense in the womb, because when moms who are considering abortion hear that baby's heartbeat via ultrasound, they're twice as likely to choose life. Preborn rescues 200 babies every day from abortion by simply providing moms with ultrasounds. By 6 weeks, a baby's eyes are forming. By 10 weeks, a baby's elbows and knees are able to bend. Preborn needs your help to save these precious lives. Preborn is out there on the front lines. They're helping women choose life. Please consider sponsoring one ultrasound for just $28 and save a life today. Or if you have the means, consider a leadership gift of $5,000. That tax-deductible gift will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours and help rescue 200 innocent lives. Go to preborn.com/Ben to donate today. It's the most important thing you're going to do today, maybe ever, because saving lives doesn't get more important than that. Go to preborn.com/Ben. These ultrasounds are, in fact, life-saving. Moms meet their babies long before they're born. When they meet their baby, it makes it a lot harder for them to get an abortion. Go to preborn.com/Ben or dial #250 and say keyword baby. That's #250 baby. So meanwhile, the same people who are out there attacking Donald Trump for his anti-Semitism, what do they have to say about the Biden administration's new take with regard to what Israel should do in Rafah? There are 4 battalions of Hamas terrorists in Rafah. They have to be killed. They have to be destroyed in order for Israel to win the war against Hamas. Everyone knows this. And yet today, the Biden State Department spokesperson was out there saying, we can't allow military activity in Rafah until there's a real credible plan. What exactly would a real credible plan look like? Like, any time now, guys, would it look like your disastrous Afghanistan pullout? By the way, I noticed that the Biden administration has been calling for endless amounts of aid to Ukraine without any credible military plan to win back the Donbass or Crimea. Zero credible military plan to do all of that. Now, I'm in favor of funding Ukraine to the tune of preventing Russia from taking more territory. I'm in favor of pushing Putin to the table such that the battle lines get frozen and the conflict ends. And that requires continued Western funding of Ukraine. But not one single solitary time has the Biden administration said to the Ukrainians, guys, before we pour $60 billion into your country for a military offensive in, say, the Donbass or Crimea, would you like to explain to us how this is going to work? You know, against a nuclear armed superpower. Meanwhile, Israel is trying to fight down and kill a terrorist group that is not nearly as well equipped as the IDF, not nearly as sophisticated as the IDF, but they do have terror tunnels. And Israel's been fighting these people for legitimately decades. And the White House is like, well, we'll need to see a plan on that one. We'll need to see a plan. That couldn't have anything to do with the votes in Dearborn, could it? Here's the Biden State Department spokesperson.
What assurances did President Biden get from the Israeli Prime Minister?
As it relates to the call between the President and Prime Minister Netanyahu, you saw the National Security Advisor yesterday speak pretty clearly about the topics. On the subject of Rafah, the United States has been very clear that we believe that such kind of military activity in Rafah requires a real credible plan, one that addresses the very serious humanitarian pieces that exist in Rafah.
I want to hear this doof from the State Department talk about military policy. He seems like he really knows what he's talking about. Probably he should design the battle plan for Rafah. And if I seem annoyed by this, it's only because I know a lot of IDF soldiers, including people who have dealt with the wounded and the killed, who have been the ones going into harm's way in order to kill members of Hamas, while attempting to distinguish them from civilians, by the way. And meanwhile, we got schmucks like these people out there suggesting that they have a magical battle plan. The magic plan. Man, if only Israel had the magic plan in the first place, if only they'd had the Biden magic wand, then clearly they would have been able to use that. Bibi Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, who's the leader of, again, a unity government war cabinet, said, quote, we have a disagreement with the Americans about the need to enter Rafah. Not about the need to eliminate Hamas, the need to enter Rafah. We do not see a way to eliminate Hamas militarily without destroying these remaining battalions. We're determined to do it. I made it clear to the president in our conversation in the clearest way, we are determined to complete the elimination of these battalions in Rafah. There is no way to do it except by going in on the ground. So what exactly is that? If the Americans are willing to offer a plan, I'm sure the Israelis would love to listen to it, But they're not offering a plan. What they really want is for this thing to stop. And they want this to stop, even if it means that Hamas remains in place. How do you know? Well, because they're laundering that message out through the media. So the Wall Street Journal, again, when it comes to the Wall Street Journal, by the way, for those who are media observers, the Wall Street Journal op-ed page is conservative. The rest of the Wall Street Journal, their reporting page, is actually to the left of the New York Times. The reporters are actually to the left of the New York Times. They've done statistical analysis on this sort of stuff. So anybody who assumes that it's Wall Street Journal, therefore it's conservative, that's not true. In any case, there's a piece titled, quote, "The Dilemma Impeding an Israel-Hamas Ceasefire. A deal to release hostages and pause the Gaza war is held back by Israel's goal of destroying the militant group." Oh, well, I mean, if you say it that way, oh, you mean that Israel is holding up the works on getting back its hostages because they won't agree to let Hamas survive after killing 1,200 Israelis and taking 250 hostage and firing rockets continuously into Israel for the last 20 years? Well, I mean, wow, they seem really intransigent. Again, it all goes back to that hilarious cartoon of John Kerry when he was Secretary of State under Barack Obama, sitting with a member of Hamas and a member of the Israeli government and saying to the Israeli, "Why won't you just accept their demand that you die?" That's effectively what they're saying. Well, why don't you just, we can get to peace if you'll just allow Hamas to continue running the place. Quote, "Israel and Hamas are locked in Gaza truce talks with goals that seem impossible to reconcile. Israeli negotiators are seeking not only the release of dozens of hostages, but also the freedom to resume a military campaign to crush Hamas once and for all after any ceasefire ends. In contrast, Hamas is essentially negotiating for its survival, pushing for a lasting truce and ways to remain influential in post-war Gaza, if no longer its ruler." Well, I mean, if that's the case, ain't no deal gonna get done. Because it turns out that after you launch a war and then you start losing, you don't get to make a deal. That's not the way any of this works. The fact the United States is trying to hold this up. Again, there's only one reason for that. It's because Joe Biden is a coward. He is a political coward. He's afraid of his left flank. He's afraid of voters in Dearborn. He thinks he's going to lose the election based on losing his radical base. Ironically, he's going to lose the election because he's losing his moderate base. That's the part that's really hilarious. Okay, meanwhile, President Trump, he endorsed a candidate in Ohio. There's an Ohio Senate primary. The Ohio Senate primary was between a character named Bernie Moreno and another character who's in the state Senate, whose name was LaRose. And Bernie Moreno, who was the endorsed candidate by Donald Trump, he won the primary, according to the Wall Street Journal. Trump's grip on the GOP continued to tighten on Tuesday in Ohio when his chosen candidate, Bernie Moreno, prevailed over state Senator Matt Dolan, a critic of the former president. Trump basically endorsed because Moreno declared fealty to Trump. This is the way, unfortunately, that Donald Trump endorses Senate candidates. It worked out amazing in 2022, by the way. It worked out just spectacularly. In between Dr. Oz, Herschel Walker, Blake Masters, just Don Baldick in New Hampshire, worked out great for Republicans. Probably it'll work out great in Ohio as well, except that I'm looking at the polls right now, and the polls suggest, sadly, that Sherrod Brown, who's a very vulnerable senator in a red state, is currently leading Bernie Moreno by an average of about 5 points right now. Now, again, Bernie Moreno may pull it out. Maybe he turns around his campaign. But it seems to me that candidates should not actually be selected on the basis of personal loyalty to a presidential candidate. How do you know, by the way, the Democrats think that Moreno is the better candidate for them? Because they literally dump money into him. This Democratic plan, by the way, has been working wonders for them for years at this point. They find a Republican candidate in a primary. They elevate him with millions of dollars. He wins, and then he loses the general. Moreno has received help from Democrats' Duty and Country PAC. They began spending $2.5 million on TV ads, calling the car dealer too conservative for Ohio, which, of course, was a way of endorsing him in a backdoor fashion. So Governor Mike DeWine, who won running away in his gubernatorial race in Ohio, and I think he's too moderate, but he didn't win running away, as opposed to, say, J.D. Vance in Ohio, who won a fairly close race in his Senate race in Ohio. DeWine said, quote, "That Democrats know Moreno is the weakest candidate to beat Sherrod Brown this fall. Senator Rob Portman, also who won easily a reelect in his Ohio bid last time he was in the Senate, also endorsed Dolan, who was the actual other candidate." And so here we go. It'll be Moreno. Moreno's candidacy has also been plagued by this bizarre rumor that back in 2009 or something, he joined anonymously some sort of men-seeking men sex site. And then he claimed that it was an intern. The intern came out and took credit for it, so presumably it was the intern. We don't have any evidence to the contrary, but you would assume that gets brought up. Moreno has shifted his positions politically a lot of times. That is no longer a barrier to entry for Republican primary voters. So that's a critique of Donald Trump's candidate picking ability in the Senate. We'll see how Bernie Moreno does. again, I want him to win. He's the Republican in that race against Sherrod Brown, who's truly a terrible senator. We'll see how he performs. Meanwhile, Donald Trump is clarifying something. The media have been saying that Donald Trump is trying to end NATO. It's not true. It's not true. Again, there's a gap between some of the things that Donald Trump says on the campaign trail and then how he actually implements policy. I like Donald Trump on policy. That is how he won me over for 2020. I didn't vote in the 2016 elections. I didn't like either candidate. In 2020, I voted for Donald Trump. In 2024, I'm giving money to Donald Trump. Why? Well, because here is Donald Trump explaining, for example, that when it comes to NATO, he's not trying to undercut NATO. He's trying to get everybody to pay in.
If they start to pay their bills properly and the club is fair, are places like Poland defended? Will America be there?
Yeah, but the United States should pay its fair share, not everybody else's fair share.
No, fair enough.
I believe the United States was paying 90% of NATO, the cost of NATO. Could be 100%.
Yep.
It was the most unfair thing. And don't forget, it's more important to them than it is to us. We have an ocean in between some problems, okay? We have a nice, big, beautiful ocean. And it's more important for them. They were taking advantage, and they did. They took advantage of us on trade, and they took advantage on...
So if they play fair, if they start to play fair, America's there.
Yes, 100%.
Okay, again, that is not what the isolationists in the Republican Party are saying. They're saying that Trump wants to end NATO. He's explicitly saying the opposite. That is clearly not true. Also, again, maybe it's a minor thing, or maybe I'm a single-issue voter. Anybody who pledges to deport Prince Harry, I'm in favor of. Here's President Trump saying maybe he'll do that.
If he's lied on his visa form, doesn't the truth need to come out?
We'll have
should he get special privileges that nobody else does?
No, and we'll have to see if they know something about the drugs, and if he lied, they'll have to take appropriate action.
Appropriate action?
Yeah.
Which might mean not staying
in
America.
Oh, I don't know. You'll have to tell me. You just have to tell me.
Okay, I'm for that. And if he pledges to strip Meghan Markle of her citizenship, man, make him emperor. Just joking, guys. Alrighty, coming up, we'll be joined by the boys from Crane and Company. They're here to talk a little bit of sports. If you're not a member, become a member. Use code Shapiro at checkout for 2 months free on all annual plans. Click that link in the description and join us.